Calling Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, March 4th. The time is 3:31 p.m. Committee members present today: Vice Chair Senator Dyson, Senator McGuire, Senator Machicki, Senator French, and myself, Senator Giesel. I expect Senator Bishop and Senator Fairclough to be joining us very shortly. They are still in the Finance Committee. So, first bill on the agenda today is Senate Joint Resolution Number 10, related to Arctic policy, the Coast Guard, and Arctic Council. So, I will have my University of Alaska intern Joe Burns come forward, and Joe is going to briefly describe the resolution for us.
Do you want a motion?
Well, it's not necessary. Apparently.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Burns. I am a University of Alaska intern working for Senator Kathy Giesel. Senate Resolution 10, broadly, deals with the overall Arctic policy of the United States, with particular emphasis on how that policy affects Alaska. Specifically, SGR 10 urges Congress to expand the existing U.S. Coast Guard icebreaker fleet to maintain its growing Arctic responsibilities, requests that the U.S. Department of State include a designated representative from the state of Alaska to serve as part of its official member state delegation to the increasingly influential Arctic Council, and advises the U.S. to assert its political, strategic, environmental, and economic interests in the Arctic by pursuing America's vast diplomatic, military, and economic means. Globally, we see renewed interest in the Arctic because of the diminishing levels of polar sea ice, presenting new opportunities to the world. Geologists believe the Arctic holds the potential for large quantities of natural resources that could promote domestic energy security and the Alaskan economy. The decline and the amount of polar sea ice is also presenting commercial interests, with the opportunity to reduce international shipping times compared to conventional routes by navigating the Arctic Ocean. Though the rest of the world appears to recognize the potential of the Arctic, there has been relatively little interest exhibited at the federal level in Arctic affairs. If you turn your attention to the page titled Major Icebreakers of the World in your packet, this paper, published by the U.S. Coast Guard, reveals how our neighbors have demonstrated their Arctic interests. Icebreakers are essential to carrying out Arctic operations and projecting a nation's presence in northern waters. As you can see, Russia has 17 state-operated icebreakers. Canada has 6. The United States, though, has 3 Coast Guard icebreakers, and only one of those are presently in service. U.S. interests are at stake in the Arctic, and these interests are a particular concern to Alaskans. International Arctic policy affects Alaskans uniquely compared to any other American. To preserve Alaskan interests, SGR 10 seeks to give Alaska a presence in the Arctic Council. Since its inception in 1996, this international high-level forum has emerged as the leading channel for the discussion of international Arctic affairs among all the Arctic states. We believe that Alaska's Arctic interests are fundamentally America's Arctic interests, and that whatever avenue we have available to convey those interests should be pursued. Our nation should seek to unlock the Arctic's potential by having the U.S. take a leadership role in guiding international Arctic policy. Our belief is that adopting the provisions of SGR 10 would be a good step in advancing that goal. That concludes my prepared remarks. However, I would like to bring to the committee's attention that there is some updated information regarding the number of Russian icebreakers that should be reflected in the resolution. On page 2, line 24, the total number of Russian icebreakers presently commissioned is now 36 vessels. And below it, on line 25, the number of Russian government-operated icebreakers presently commissioned is 17. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burns. I would entertain a conceptual amendment to correct the Russian fleet numbers.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I move a conceptual amendment based on the updated information we just heard about on page 2, line 24, change the number 35 to 36, on line 25, change the number 22 to 17.
Without objection, the amendment is adopted. Thank you. Is there any discussion? I'll just mention great accolades to Senator McGuire, who has certainly pushed forward the Arctic focus by formation of the Arctic Caucus as part of PENWAR during her presidency of PENWAR. She's also co-chair of the Alaska Arctic Policy Commission, which will be taking up these kinds of issues. So she certainly brings great expertise to this topic. And I want to express my appreciation, Senator McGuire.
Yeah, it's a joy to work with you on this issue.
I will now ask if there's any other questions, comments. If not,
just one, Madam Chair.
Senator French.
And it's maybe more of a curiosity for your intern, unless someone on the committee knows. I'm just wondering how much an icebreaker costs. We're calling on Congress to buy some icebreakers, I think, and I'm wondering what sort of a commitment we're asking them to make.
Senator French, through the chair, I unfortunately do not have that information, but I can get back to you.
Fair enough. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator French. I actually am looking at an article about the IVIC. Mm-hmm. The IVIC is a privately owned icebreaker. It was actually commissioned by Royal Dutch Shell for construction by a company called Edison
Schwest
Offshore. Thank you. And I see that it was a $150 million contract. Now, it's an icebreaking anchor-handling tug vessel, so it's not a full icebreaker. It is somewhat smaller. Now, the University of Alaska Fairbanks, of course, has a research vessel right now that's about to be harbored in Seward, and that's the Sikuliak. And I don't know what the cost for that was, but these are substantially expensive vessels, absolutely.
Yes.
Good question. Further, Senator Dyson.
Yeah. Just general information, there's a order of magnitude difference between an icebreaker that can break seasonal ice and one that can bust through multi-seasonal ice, and probably a difference of about a factor of three. And the U.S. is now in the process of getting one of their multi-year ice capable vessels, and I think they're spending $2.5-3 million just to recommission it. I think that's the Polar Star, and they're considering whether or not to do the same with the Polar Sea, a sister vessel.
Thank you, Senator Dyson. Further discussion? Okay. I will ask for a motion to move the joint resolution.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I move SJR 10 as amended with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations passed from Senate Resources to the next committee of referral.
Hearing no objection, the amendment passes, the joint resolution as amended passes. We will take a brief at ease to sign the transmittal documents. The next bill before us is Senate Bill 54. This was a bill by request of the Senate Resources Committee. It deals with a commercial fisheries entry commission related to weather vane scallops and Bering Sea hair crab fisheries. Testifying today, I believe we have Ben Brown and the commissioner, Commissioner Cora Campbell. So if you would come forward and present the bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, committee members. I appreciate the opportunity. I just have some brief introductory comments for you, and then Ben Brown will get more into some of the details of this legislation. But I wanted to come before you and just thank the committee for introducing Senate Bill 54 and let you know that the Department of Fish and Game supports the passage of this legislation. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game manages most aspects of the crab and scallop fisheries in both state and federal waters under agreement with the federal government. And this bill would extend the Bering Sea hair crab and weather vane scallop vessel-based limited entry program for another 10 years. And I'll focus mostly on the sustainability and conservation aspects of the program. The vessel-based program for the Bering Sea hair crab and weather vane scallops fisheries was born out of a need to ensure the sustainability of those two fishery resources. Originally, a conventional limited entry program was examined. That's a case where permits are awarded to individuals like you're more familiar with in other fisheries. But in the case of these two particular fisheries, it was found to be inadequate when it came to protecting the economic health and stability of the fishery and promoting sustained yield of the resource. So to address these concerns, a vessel-based limited entry program was brought forward to the legislature. The enabling legislation was passed in 2002 that established the program, and it was extended again by the legislature in 2008. These are the only two vessel-based limited entry programs in Alaska due to the unique nature of these fisheries. And during the time that the program's been in place, it has worked well. The scallop limited entry program has provided an economically viable fishery and a sustainable fishery, which is what's most important to the department. The hair crab limited entry program remains in place. That fishery is currently closed, but it remains in place so that if and when the fishery reopens, we'll have the ability to limit participation to ensure that fishery's continued sustainability. So again, Ben Brown from CFEC, I'm sure, has a lot more to tell you about this, but I do appreciate you hearing this legislation. Wanted you to know that we support it and wanted to speak to the sustainability aspects.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Any questions for the Commissioner from committee members? Yes, Senator Machiki.
Thanks, Commissioner. Being a limited entry permit holder in the state, I noticed in the transmittal letter that it talks about worrying about dire consequences that haven't taken place. The five-year limits would give someone time to react if, say, the word salmon were dropped in there, or cod, or some other fishery. Understanding the intent of the Constitution to not get into corporate ownership of permits in the state of Alaska, which is what our Constitution is based around, what would protect other fisheries from being added to this in the future?
Through the chair, Senator Machiki, this legislation specifically authorizes a vessel-based system for these two fisheries for particular reasons. And so it's not currently something that's authorized for other fisheries. And quite frankly, for policy reasons, I think it's very unlikely that it would be extended to other fisheries. But recognize that with scallop fisheries, you're talking about a fishery that is essentially a dredging operation. It's hard on bottom gear. And so I believe that a big part of the reason that we looked at wanting to come up with a limited entry system that would effectively limit participation in this fishery is because we have an interest in seeing those resources harvested efficiently by an appropriate number of vessels and not necessarily allowing for unlimited expansion of the number of vessels that are participating in that fishery. So in contrast with some of our other limited entry programs, like salmon, the desire of the state is to reduce barriers to entry, to make those opportunities available to Alaskans that want to participate in those fisheries. And so I think you would just see a very different policy discussion if something like that were to be brought up.
Follow-up? Yes, Senator Chickie.
What if I decided I really wanted to enter into the weather vane scallop fishery? Would I have an opportunity to purchase one of the vessels and participate in that fishery, or is it has it become difficult because of the corporate nature of the permit system?
Through the chair, Senator, the permits and the vessels are available for transfer, and some have transferred since the beginning of the program. One thing I would say is that the scallop fishery, the scallop beds themselves are on both the state and federal side of the boundary, and the scallop fishery is also limited on the federal side. So the state program is complementary to a federal program that also limits entry in federal waters. And most of the fishing activity takes place across those boundaries, and so there would be a need to essentially buy into both programs if you want to have full access to the beds.
Okay.
Follow-up?
No, thanks.
All right. Any other questions for the commissioner? All right. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Ben, you're next, I guess.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. And again, our thanks to Commissioner Campbell for joining us. I know she has other competing meetings she's at in the building this afternoon. So for the record, I'm Benjamin Brown, and I'm a commissioner at the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. And I think Mr. Campbell did a very good job giving you the departmental sort of 30,000-foot view of this fishery. And, Madam Chairman, I think Senator Chickie's question about exclusivity was something I knew was going to be asked, and so we can talk about that a little bit more. But just by way of introduction, some of you were members of the legislature when this issue first came up. Back in 1997 was when the first bill passed related to the weather vane scallop fishery, and it was Representative Osterman's bill, and it passed both the House and Senate unanimously. I like to point out there wasn't very much controversy about vessel-based limitation at that time. Now, that bill, House Bill 141, didn't create the vessel-based limited system, but it envisioned its creation at the same time the legislature put a moratorium on the entry of any new vessels into the fishery. And the reason for that is dire concerns about overfishing. The dredges are not easy on the benthic environment on the seafloor. I mean, they do a great job getting the scallops up, but if they're not used carefully, there are bycatch problems with some important crab species that migrate through the scallop beds. The crab are more ambulatory than the scallops. And so that moratorium was, again, a unanimous decision of this legislature to say, stop, no more, we've got to figure out how we're going to manage this. And several years later, after our friends at the National Marine Fisheries Service imposed a federal scallop license limitation program, this legislature chose to pass legislation that specifically gave us as a commission the tool of vessel-based limited entry. And Madam Chairman, to return to Senator Marchicki's question, there can't really be a slippery slope because the legislature would have to change the statute to allow vessel-based limited entry for any other fishery, any other, well, the gear type, I don't know that that's an issue, but any other species certainly. Even if there were three commissioners out at the CIPC offices who wanted to do it, we would be powerless to do so absent action by the legislature. That stated, I can speak for Chairman Twomley and myself that we have absolutely no interest in vessel-based limited entry for any other fisheries. It's just not required given the biological or economic characteristics of any other fishery, and we firmly believe that limited entry as allowed for by the voters in the early 70s and created by the legislature in the original Limited Entry Act is what we should be doing. This is an exceptional fishery given, again, the biological and economic nature of it and the level of participation. So what had happened in the...
Excuse me, Mr. Brown, hang on for 1 second. Senator Marchicki had a question.
Sometimes I ask questions to help constituents understand that the concern is not significant for the other fisheries. I still have constituents that were around during fish trap days, if you will. So they like where our constitution went and just are concerned for their own fisheries. So, but thank you very much for the answers.
Madam Chairman, thank you, Senator Marchicki, for asking them, because I mean, I think that's the reason there is concern and debate about this fishery is why is it different from the other ones and how do we make sure it doesn't have a slippery or creeping effect into the other fisheries, because that's certainly not something we want to see. But in the 90s, there was just really bad fishing practices going on, and the moratorium was necessary. That was driven by the collapse of the scallop fishery over on the East Coast, you know, in New England. And some of those boats came around and decided to fish in Alaskan waters, and they were able to do so until the moratoria in the state and federal waters were put into place. That froze things in time, but it didn't answer the long-term question of how do we issue limited entry permits for these fisheries in a manner that's going to work in the long run. And so vessel-based limited entry, which, and I know a couple of the members of the committee here were in the House when that legislation was debated back in 2002, it was a vigorous debate. And a lot of hard questions were asked about what is this going to mean to Alaskans who want to get involved in the fishery. And the impediments to entry are financial as much as anything else, in terms of these are pretty large boats. They require significant numbers of crew members and operating, you know, 24/7 a lot of the time to go out and do the harvesting. There are some pretty stringent fisheries management plan provisions on onboard observer coverage, inability to use electric mechanical shuckers. Everything has to be hand shucked. And other measures like that to make sure that the amount of fishing capacity in the water is not going to overwhelm the resource. So once the bill passed in 2002, it actually didn't have a sunset. Like all the rest of our limited entry programs, it would have existed in perpetuity, but for an amendment that was put on right at the end of that process on the Senate floor. And because the bill needed to pass that session, a five-year sunset was put into place. When it came up for review 5 years ago, there was a bill to extend it that didn't pass, so that provision was attached to another bill, but we're here now looking at a sunset at the end of this year in 2013. And we have multiple concerns at CFEC. Commissioner Campbell spoke for what I think her biologists and the Division of Commercial Fisheries know to be a strong likelihood that reversion to open access would require the managers to close the fishery down on the state waters side. And there could still be some open access fishing there, but it would probably lead to that being shut down in a pretty permanent way in a short amount of time. We don't know what our colleagues on the federal side would do, but it would certainly upend the delegated management regime that we have right now, because it would be somewhat anomalous to have the state managing the federal waters if there wasn't a state water fishery being managed. So we believe that the program is working well. We believe that those who hold the permits obtained them in a manner entirely consistent with the vessel-based limited entry provisions that were created in 2002. And some of those permits have certainly transferred hands. They are fished and held in conjunction with the federal permits. We can't speak to much of the legalities on the federal side of the line, but I certainly can tell you that everything that's happening on the state water side of the line is legal and I believe constitutional. If anyone really thought that this program were too exclusive and violative of the Alaska Constitution, frankly, being an attorney, I would have expected to see some sort of attempt to litigate it. But I also understand that litigation is expensive and maybe people have chosen not to bring an action because it's just such a steep hill to climb up. Even if one were to be brought, I'm confident the court system, the Alaska Supreme Court, would say, no, this is not too exclusive. It's serving the biological and conservation purposes of the Limited Entry Act, and it's allowing fishermen who are dependent on the economic return on the resource to provide for themselves and for their crew members. And we're going to hear from some of those folks who work in the fishery today, both in the cooperative, which has been formed, and not within the cooperative. Just to speak to that, out of the initial set of permits that were issued, there are five that are active now. Three are being fished in the cooperative and two are independent. And I think you're going to hear from all five of those actors today, and hopefully that will give you a human face, not just a, someone once said that limited entry is for bureaucrats. And so I guess I'm the CFEC bureaucrat telling you what we think is an agency, but we have real flesh and blood fishermen here and online that can tell you a little bit more about what this fishery means to them and why they want to see this legislation pass so it doesn't cease, the program doesn't cease to exist at the end of the year. So I know that this is a very busy committee and we're grateful to be here for a hearing today. I could go on at great length about it because it's an interesting subject, but I would prefer to answer any questions committee members may have, Madam Chairman, and then leave time for, as I said, the real fishermen who are here in the room and online.
Very good, Mr. Brown. Questions for Mr. Brown? All right, let's go right to public comment. And I see we have a substantial list of folks here in the audience. Let's see. Looks like the first one wishing to testify actually is Mona Stone.
Madam Chairman, it's actually going to be Jim Stone.
All right, welcome, Jim. You signed in as Mona, so please come.
I think that was meant to happen.
All right, please come in and put yourself on the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senate Resource Committee. My name is Jim Stone. I'm with the Alaska Scallop Association, partner on three of the scallop boats. And with your permission, I'd like to introduce some of the people so we don't have to go through everyone coming up here.
That'd be great.
Okay, thank
sure.
you. Okay, we have here is Glenn Mickelson. He's one of my partners. He's been fishing for 34 years. John Lamar from Kodiak, also fishing 35 years. Eric Nyhammer, another fisherman, also 35 years. We're all about 50 years old, so, and we've all fished for many years together. We have the Minios. This is Shirley Minio and Bobby Minio. Shirley is the wife of Tom Minio, who's in Kodiak and sick today. He had wanted to attend and testify, and a captain of the provider. And Bobby also works on the provider. And my wife, Mona Stone, and she's the last but not least, probably the most important in our organization, at least as far as I'm concerned. She does a lot of our marketing. She goes out and panseer scallops all over the state, up and down the West Coast, and has just done a huge amount to increase the value of our scallops, and we've gone a long ways from just being another scallop commodity in a huge world complex of scallops. And they're really separating a high-end scallop as far as chefs in the culinary world understand. And if you're okay, I'd like to read a testimony in. Thanks.
That'd be great. Thank you, Mr. Stone.
Like I said, I'm a 35-year fisherman. I fished Alaska crab, cod, scallops, and salmon. I'm currently the manager and of three of these scallop vessels, and also am kind of the guy in charge of scallop sales. These are all the fishermen partners on three large scallop catcher freezer boats, all homeported in Kodiak. Essentially, we each one of us, there's six of us, each one of us essentially owns half of a boat. These boats average about 100 feet in length and are quite expensive to own and operate. They fish with 12 crewmen and girls, must carry required observers at a cost of almost $400 a day, and we're being told that's going to go up substantially soon. We burn 600 gallons of fuel a day, and fuel is up about 19%, it looks like, when we get going in June again. Insurance cost has gone up 42%. This year alone. None of us can afford to own one of these by ourselves, and financially it makes sense for us to all work together. We've done our due diligence to ensure that our ownership violates neither state nor federal rules, and this is kind of difficult as there's both of these rules are different yet in the same fishery. Conservation measures have forced this fishery from about $1.2 million in the 90s to only about 400,000 pounds today. We applaud and support our fishery manager's stance on the side of precaution and in the name of sustainability. With the reductions we did have drastic effect on the fishing boats and the amount that we can fish, again, making it logical for us to partner together. We are given very small crab bycatch amounts in the different areas and must work together to avoid these roving schools of crab. And again, being partners, working together, telling the guy, hey, there's crab over here. Let's stay off of it. We're happy to report that the conservation record of ADF&G's management of the scallop fishery has not gone unnoticed. We have lobbied for many years with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch program to rate Alaska weather vane scallops. Such a small fishery as ours is not normally on their radar and has been left unrated by any third parties. When selling to the high-end consumers and chefs that we go after in our marketing, these ratings have become increasingly important. With the help of ADF&G, University of Alaska, and National Marine Fisheries in Anchorage, we've been able to prove our stance as a sustainable fishery in Seafood Watch's eyes. In December, Alaska Weather Vane Scallops received their highest rating of Best Alternative. We've been invited to attend their cooking solutions in May for a three-day event, and we'll be afforded a golden opportunity to introduce Alaska Weather Vane Scallops to hundreds of world-famous chefs. And again, my wife Mona will be leading the charge and helping us fishermen communicate with chefs on how to properly prepare them. On the subject of marketing, as a result of working together, we've been able to get out to the culinary world and market ourselves. We participate with seafood and fisheries events all over the state, up and down the West Coast, and recently in Vancouver, BC. Again, Mona. Frequently, we work with side by side with ASME and are pushing the Alaska brand name right with them. And but by the way, we are huge supporters of ASME and wish to thank you all in your support of ASME and encourage to continue the funding. We think it's very, very important for all of our fisheries. We've managed to get the Alaska weather vane scallop away from being just another commodity. I mentioned all that before. Most of the currently open scallop beds are 100% in the federal waters, with a couple of exceptions. One is in Shilikoff Strait, and the other is off of Yakutat, where there's small pieces where the 3 mile line goes through the bed. So about 10 to 20% of our total scallop catch comes out of state waters, the remainder out of the federal waters. And as a bit of historical perspective, and I think that Commissioner Brown covered this pretty well, but we got into this position of needing legislative help back in 1995 when a vessel from the East Coast found a loophole in the regulations, turned in their fishing license, and were able to go out into the federal waters and fish scallops. And this loophole gave ADF&G no ability to stop them. They had just no authority because of this loophole. National Marine Fisheries couldn't do anything. So they fished on and on for several months and until National Marine Fisheries found a way to stop them, and then they left the state and to never return. In 1996, as a result of this, the entire fishery was shut down, both federal and state, and obviously the people who suffered was the honest fishermen that had nothing to do with what they did, us. No pay for an entire year obviously was devastating. ADF&G has made it clear that if the Vessel Limited Entry Program is not extended, that it will be unable to manage the fishery if it returns to open access and will be unable to open state waters, making, again, these same honest scallopers suffer again unnecessarily with quota restrictions or quota reductions. I refer you to the Alaska Fishermen's of Alaska Resolution, which I don't know if you have in front of you, but the last two whereases are the ones that I guess speak to us the most, and I'll read down there. Whereas allowing the vessel-based limited entry system to expire at the end of 2013 would prevent the sustainable yield management of those fisheries and would significantly harm those who hold permits for these fisheries and those employed in the fisheries. The last whereas is allowing the vessel-based limited entry system to expire at the end of 2013 would benefit no one and would cause loss of opportunity and economic harm, and that was voted for unanimously with their 36 members on the board of the UFA. I thank you for the time, and please do these hard-working, lifelong, multi-generational fishermen and families no harm. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stone. I also wanted to mention that we have a letter from the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council advocating passage of this bill also. So, Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Great presentation. One question. How long can you stay in business if your insurance rates keep going up 42% a year? And what's driving that?
Madam Chair, Senator Bishop, I can't say from my standpoint what's driving it. I assume it's claims that are coming into the fishing industry, and you know we lump in with a whole bunch of fisheries from across the country, normally going to London for insurance. Our brokers are in Seattle, but they buy worldwide, whoever's doing it. I think it's just claims, and our brokers explained to us that this is kind of a up and down, an ebb and tide, and that right now there's just no one that really wants to insure fishing vessels, and that it's just a difficult market is the way they explained to us and told us to hold on, and hopefully we'll see a reduction in the following year.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Stone? Yes, Senator Machicki.
How many, other than the provider Ocean Hunter and Arctic Hunter, how many vessels are in the fleet active?
Senator Machicki, there's four vessels in the last few years. There's the Arctic Hunter, Ocean Hunter, Provider, and Kilkenny. And I would say that's been true for about 5 years. There's also a vessel owned by Max Hulls, and he, I don't believe, has been out fishing for 4 or 5 years. And I believe that he'll be signing in to talk for himself, but it's just a matter of economics, and it's a difficult fishery to work in. Again, that's why we work together. It's it's almost impossible to do this on your own and pay all the bills.
To follow up, just I'm happy to see you getting Alaska's good name out there. I am a regular buyer of your scallops. They're incredible, and thanks for your presentation.
Well, Senator, we believe they're the sweetest scallops in the world, and we'll continue to push that hard, and we never say no to a good fisheries cause, and are happy to get Mona and the Pantsier station out. So, thank you.
Good. Further questions for Mr. Stone? All right. Thank you. There are other folks here in the room that Mr. Stone has already introduced. Did any of you wish to speak individually today? Would you come to the table and identify yourself for the record, and then we'd be glad to hear your testimony.
I'm John Lamar. Thanks Hi. For letting me speak, Commissioner.
Welcome.
On the vessels, there's one that just sold to someone on the East Coast, and I think a lot of it they bought it because they misled on the size of the stocks. You know, the total allowable catch in the state is 1.2 or 1.5 million pounds, and I believe that's why they purchased that permit, you know, because now we're only fishing around 400,000 pounds. And it, you know, the current price of scallops, that they, I think they thought they had something, you know, worth putting their money in. And I think they were misinformed or misled on whoever they bought it from. But just to let you know, there is another permit that was being fished a few years ago by, I can't remember the gentleman's name, which, like I said, just to let you know, there was another permit that somebody's purchased that may come back into the fishery.
Okay.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. There are four folks online who are interested in testifying. Looks like they're in the Kodiak LIO, so we'll go ahead and get started with them. The first person on the list is Alexis Kwachka. I think I mispronounced that, but welcome. All right, can you hear us?
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the Resource Committee. For the record, my name's Alexis Kwachka, and I was one of the naysayers, and I'll continue to be one of the naysayers. I oppose it. I understand, and I think there are, as the commissioner pointed out, there's some good reasons for it. But overall, I oppose the bill, and I just want to kind of rattle off a few things. When we started, there were 11 boats. There are four boats now, only two of which are fishing in state waters. Let's be real clear. This is a monopoly on the federal side, and so from that standpoint, I oppose it. It is a very bad precedent. One of the beauties of the state fisheries is that you have to be an owner operator. You have to have your boots and be on board. And I really don't like the vessel-based limited entry system for that reason. I think that being an active participant is key to state water fisheries. I do not want to see this ever slide into another fishery. We're looking at rationalizing the Gulf for the trawl fisheries, and I think that this is a bad precedent, and it's one of the reasons why I'm here speaking today. To kind of wrap it up, I think that 10 years is inappropriate. I think if you push this forward and you continue it, I think a five-year sunset is more appropriate. That way, if we get it wrong, we can come back. I realize it's busy work for you guys, and you have a lot on your plate already. But I think that this is such a bad precedent that it should be revolving on a five-year basis. And with that, I'll conclude.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Kwachka. If you would like to submit that in writing, we'd be happy to have that. We'll attach it to the bill so that in the future folks looking at this will be able to read your testimony. I do have a question for you. Have you alluded to shortening the sunset on it to 5 years? We've had two five-year extensions of this bill. Have we gotten it wrong so far?
Well, I think I'm concerned about the participation in the state waters. And granted, it's a small portion on the state water side, but basically we have a group of people that have gotten together and consolidated. So I think from the the precedent setting of lack of potential opportunity by the monopoly on the federal side of things, because they hold the LLPs too on that side, that I think the idea is to have more opportunity if you want. And yes, it's a cost prohibitive fishery to get into, but if somebody wants to get to, I think if there's a permit out there that they can get, they should go for it. So I don't think I answered your question, but I think it's more appropriate to look at it on a five-year basis and just see what it's doing if it's on track.
Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Kwachka from committee members? All right. Seeing none, we'll go to the next person. In Kodiak, Brendan Harrington is present. Would you like to testify, Mr. Harrington?
Sure. I would like to make a brief statement.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brendan Harrington. I'm speaking in support of Bill 54. And I'm representing the Kilkenny, which is the independent boat, independent scallop boat, the fourth boat, if you will. I'd just like to start by saying a little bit about myself and where we are with our business. I'm a lifelong Alaska resident and a lifelong fisherman as well, 32 years old now, been fishing out of Kodiak since I was 9, and participated in a lot of different fisheries. But in 2009, seeing the way that things were going with We were mostly involved in the halibut fishery, and so we decided to diversify, and we bought one of the open scallop permits and boats, the Kilkenny. We employ 8 people, as it was previously mentioned. It's a heavy crude fishery, and our crew is about evenly split between Kodiak residents and Homer residents. The Kilkenny was home ported out of Homer when we bought her, so we offered everyone who was on the boat their job still. So it came down to it, about half of the people stayed on, and then we've picked up the slack with crew members from Kodiak who had previously fished with us in the other fisheries and on our other boat. And I think taken as a whole, we're a pretty good representation of the population up here in Alaska. We're Native Alaskans, Alaska Natives, men and women on board. The weather vane fishery, it's small, and there's just a few boats participating. And maybe that's why. Maybe it's the limited fleet size that makes it possible. But I've been pretty pleasantly surprised and impressed by the level of oversight that the state's managed to put together for the fishery, and the degree of communication that exists between the regulators and the fishermen, and the generally conservation-minded management of the fishery, which has also been previously mentioned is necessary when you're doing something like bottom trawling, dredging. I feel pretty confident about the management and the future health of the scallop stocks and fishery, which is a pretty welcome feeling given the uncertainty of certain other sectors of the fishery. Of the fisheries up here, like the halibut fishery, for example. That said, our biggest point of worry since we made the investment in the scallop fishery has been the possibility of the expiration of the state limited entry permits at the end of the year here, because naturally the investment level for entry was a pretty large investment, and we'd hate to see that large investment just kind of go into the wind at the end of the year. I like to consider myself part of the new generation of Alaskan fishermen, and we want to move beyond this boom-bust mentality of the past here and into a future where we take a smarter, more sustainable approach to harvesting and husbanding the resources. I see the current management of the weather vane scallop fishery as a good example of this new mentality of conservation, and I fear the consequences if we were to allow the vessel-based permitting system to expire and open up the state waters for more boats, especially given the fact that the current licensing system was in direct response to irresponsible actors exploiting loopholes in the previous regulations in order to fish unsupervised and unregulated with complete disregard to the sustainability of the resource. And I just want to say thanks for listening to me, and please support the bill. It's pretty vital to our business. And my family and the families of those who are working with us. Where we're kind of different from the rest of these boats is that we're taking the majority of our scallops from state waters. I mean, obviously, competition is cut in a third because of the limitations on the association. They have only one boat fishing in state waters, so we're competing with only one boat in state waters and, you know, four in federal. So you kind of flip the numbers around. For us, we took more than 80% of the scallops that we caught last year from state waters. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harrington. And if you would like to submit your comments in writing, we'd be glad to accept them. The next person signed up to testify in the Kodiak LIO is Henry Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Henry Mitchell. I am a fisheries consultant working for the Coastal Villages Region Fund. The Coastal Villages Region Fund is a CDQ group that owns numerous vessels. A number of our vessels are the successors in interest through purchase of the vessels and permits to participate in the Bering Sea hair crab fisheries. And we would like to ask the legislature to please extend the authority of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission for another period of time so that if the hair crab fisheries do get back to a healthy state, that we may be able to participate in those fisheries with our vessels and permits. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell, for your testimony. Next is Steve Branson, also in Kodiak. Are you there, Mr. Branson?
I represent the Crewmen's Association. We have a large amount of crewmen we represent. And I really don't, I can't support this bill. It seems like a continuation of a de facto privatization of what should be a public resource and for sure inside state waters is a state resource. The fleet dissolved to just a few boats. And although the Kilkenny hires a local crew, I believe the rest of the fleet is not so state-minded. I believe the state of Alaska's constitution points out that the resources of the state of Alaska should be first and foremost for the people of Alaska. And I feel that with such blocked access, it's not being, you know, that constitution isn't being followed. I'd love to go scallop fishing. I have a small boat and a small dredge. A couple of years ago, it was supposed to come up for reenactment of open access. However, that was blocked right at the last moment. But, seems like a big funnel for capital flight out of the state and to just a few people. I had a friend that worked on one of the larger dredges and said after the second pay cut he had to leave. And he didn't speak Laotian and couldn't really get along with the rest of the crew. So, I would, if it has to be extended, I would extend it for a much shorter time than 10 years. This is privatization without privatization. It's the same thing. It hasn't been good for our communities, and I still think it's a, although it's an easy way to manage things, I think adhering to the total allowable catch, implementing trip limits, and gear restrictions. Now I think the number of pounds available is based on boat length and the width of one's dredge. Seems like a smaller dredge would do less damage. Perhaps it could be a small boat fishery that would help more people rather than just funneling money out of Alaska. Thanks. That's about all I have to say.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Branson. Senator Dyson has a question.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. Yeah, is the water conditions where you fish such that small boats are in a disadvantage in tough weather?
Well, yeah, of course. But state waters are within 3 miles, and scallops are very prolific around Kodiak. I'm sure you could find a place in just about any breeze so you could work in, but yeah, it's heavy gear, and but the way it is, everybody has a limit, right? So you don't have to go out if it's blowing 50. But you can always make gear restrictions trip limits and give people enough time to fish. Like I said, I've seen bad consequences from carbonization of black cod and halibut and from crab that consolidates well and takes away the availability of income and resources for the common man.
Just to continue, if I may.
Yes, please.
Do many of the boats that fish that fishery fish other fisheries as well, other gear types?
No, I don't believe so. Well, actually, I believe my friend on the Arctic Hunter, they tendered and dragged in the Bering Sea. Yeah, they went after a right. Pleasure trawl and bottom trawl.
Right. Thank you,
there
sir.
Were, a couple of years ago, there was a couple of specialty boats. I don't think the provider switches to another fishery, but I'm not sure. Is Kilkenny fishing meals? No. Like I said, my friend was on the Arctic Hunter, and they switched around a little bit. But
thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. No further questions? All right. I notice also online is Mr. Rosenkranz and Max Huels. Both have indicated they are only available for questions. Anyone else, again, here in the room to testify? Yes. Please come forward, name and affiliation, and we'd be glad to take your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Shirley Minio, and I'm here today on behalf of my husband, Tom Minio, and he has fished 33 years in the state of Alaska for scallops, started out on the Pursuit back in 1980 and now runs the provider, and he's part owner of the provider as well. And I just want to mention that it's more or less a family business for us. His father in the past started fishing in the late 60s, I think it was 69, through the 70s and 80s. And my daughter fishes on the boat with her dad, and my son also fishes on the boat. She's fished for 14 years, and my son has fished for 16 years on the boat. And again, just wanted to stress on the fact that it is a small fisheries. There's a small amount of boats in it, and we need to keep this in place to keep our fisheries alive and surviving and keep our livelihood. So that's pretty much, and thank you for the time.
Great. Thank you, Mrs. Minio. Senator Faircloth has a question for you.
Thank you for coming. There was a previous testimony that indicated that maybe we were hiring people from out of state. Is that true in your group, or can you speak for the association?
In our group, I think we have one gentleman that lives in Oregon, and that is pretty much the only one I know of on our boat.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is he a former Alaskan or just someone who knows the fisheries?
Steve's been on our boat just a few years, and I know he's fished in other fisheries, but I can't say that he's an Alaskan resident.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I don't know.
Great. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Minio.
Thank you.
I've been advised that Max Huels, who is on the line, does wish to testify. Mr. Huels?
Huels, yes.
Welcome. If you would state your name for the record, your affiliation, and then your testimony, please.
I'm Max Huels, and I'm representing myself, my sons. Am I ready?
Yes, please proceed.
Madam Chairman, committee members, and others present, I'm Max Huels, and I sincerely thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify for this regarding Senate Bill 54. I'm representing myself, my two sons, Robert and Scott, actually the whole Huels family. I'd like now to briefly talk about our family's involvement in this fishery. We've been involved in Alaska fisheries since 79, especially scallops. And in my letter to you, which you should have there, I mentioned that we have been Alaskan residents since 1966 and were issued both state and federal scallop permits due to our historical participation. Our involvement started with harvesting and packing scallops in 40-pound bags and ice, marketing them fresh to wholesale outlets in the Anchorage area. In more recent years, we flash-froze our scallops on board in 5-pound blocks and marketed them to Anchorage and Seattle. Along the way, we built a small family-operated DEC-approved processing plant at my home in Eagle River. And for 20-some years, our family shipped scallops to customers in a number of states. And I also sold scallops at a roadside site on the Glen Highway. Possibly some of you have even bought product from me at the Connick River exit. My son Scott is unable to testify. He's a fisherman due to the prior commitments with the Youth Hockey League here in Eagle River. But Scott's involvement started with fishing Kodiak waters and then in Lower Cook Inlet fishery, the Kamishak waters. Scott was instrumental in starting the Cook Inlet fishery for small boats using 1 6-foot dredge. His 1983 proposal to the Alaska Board of Fisheries was approved, and the Cook Inlet fishery was opened. Our involvement in the fishery has been an Alaskan family operation, and after we finish the upgrades on our now dry dock vessel, we plan to re-enter the fishery, hopefully the end of this summer. Our vessel is 79 feet, and we mainly rely on harvesting scallops in state waters. Thus, we ask you to enact the Senate Bill 54, which should ensure our future in the fishery. And by the way, we have a crew of 10 that we use, and they're all from Alaska. And I thank you so much, and I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Hulse. Any questions for Mr. Hulse? Seeing none. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify?
One more.
Please. And we are drawing close to the end of the time frame for this bill, so, but please proceed.
Thank you. I'd just like to introduce myself as one of the real fishermen. Glenn Mickelson, I've 34 years of fishing in Alaska. I've fished crab, salmon, scallop, and pollock. My grandfather and father fished in Alaska before me. My sons both fish in Alaska. I have a Bristol Bay boat. And one of my sons also has a permit. Now a relief skipper on the boats. I used to be full-time skipper on one of the boats, and I've become more or less a port engineer and making sure the boats are properly maintained. Since the installation in 2009 of the Kodiak boat lift, we've been able to do most of our repairs here in Alaska. It not only helps the Kodiak businesses, it helps us. We save $25,000 to $30,000 in fuel per boat, and 2 weeks of running time back and forth. On one of the phone calls, I heard mention of a monopoly, and the state permits it. I just want to mention that the other vessel is not in the group, so I don't know that. Monopoly, which is two separate. It's only two permits fishing at this time, and we're not affiliated. I can't answer to how many. Jim would be a better person to ask as far as how many of our crew, because I'm not really dealing with crew. But last year alone, we paid out $1.6 million in crew shares. We spent in Alaska $850,000. And fuel, $480,000 in repairs and maintenance, $135,000 in groceries, and $200,000 in supplies. And just want to thank you for allowing me to state that.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Mickelson? Yes, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Mickelson, do you know how the quote I'm trying to look through for specific quotas. How is the 400,000 pounds spread now between the permits or vessels?
We don't have quotas, individual quotas. And I don't know, maybe Jim would be a better person to ask that question, but it's an Olympic-style fishery. And we don't have an individual quota.
Madam Chair, if I could ask Mr. Brown that question.
Of course. Mr. Brown?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator Faircloth, quota is a bad word because there are not quotas in state waters. There's a total allowable catch, and so because of the limited number of participants in the fisheries, it resembles something like a quota, but there's no guaranteed amount. And the biologists are the ones who actually set what they think is a sustainable harvest amount. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Scallop Plan Team, which is a joint state and federal group between NMFS and Fish and Game, held an annual meeting in Kodiak. They prepare something called the SAFE Report, the Stock Assessment and Fishery Evaluation Report, and it's all biologically driven in terms of what they know or in any given bed and how much is being brought up on the state or the federal side. But it's not, properly speaking, a quota. It's an opportunity to go out and harvest up to a preordained limit set by the biological managers. And Mr. Rosenkrantz, who is one of those managers in Kodiak, could probably do a far superior job of answering the question. But in a nutshell, that's how I would respond to the question, Madam Chairman.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Further questions? Very good. Well, with that, then, I will close public testimony on this bill. We're going to set the bill aside for right now and hold it for a future hearing. Thank you, everyone that came and testified, and truly we would welcome any written testimony you'd like to submit. Thank you. The next bill before us today is HB 36. This is a bill sponsored by Representative Tammy Wilson, dealing with munitions. And I'll invite her to come forward and present the bill to us. Welcome, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for hearing the bill today. HB 36, in 2008, when the Alaska Clean Water Act was amended to its current form, a problem was created with the state's longstanding comprehensive military munitions exemption. The proposed amendment in House Bill 36 clarifies AS 46.03.100E7 such that it cannot be misinterpreted to restrict military exercises on ranges other than instances where the Federal Clean Water Act would apply. It reduces the chance of litigation in trying to interpret waters of the U.S., which still has not been interpreted the same way. Currently, Alaska is the only state with this unclear interpretation of the Clean Water Act. If not amended, there exists a possibility that military ranges would need to curtail operations because of misinterpretations of Alaska law, even if the ranges are in compliance with federal law. The proposed amendment in HB 36 was vetted by the Environment Protection Agency, the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Department of Defense, and the Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. A few years ago, I was told this was a simple fix, but as you can tell with the agencies that had to be involved, simple was not used in the same terminology as it was for me. Therefore, House Bill 36 maintains primacy, protects the environment, and allows military exercises to continue without potential litigation. And I just want to clarify a few things that we've had in committee. If you look at the bill, we're only changing the end. We're not changing any other parts of it. Or service was added so that the Coast Guard is included. And then otherwise regulated, the rest of that is just the Clean Water Act, so that the federal law and the state law stays working together. So today with us, I have General Katkus, Commissioner of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Online, Kevin Ward, Regional Counsel for the U.S. Army Regional Environmental Office. Hopefully, Lieutenant Colonel Trumbo, Regional Counsel of the U.S. Air Force Western Region. Seth Busang, Assistant General, Attorney General for DEC, and Michelle Bonet Hale, Director of DEC's Water Division. So with that, Madam Chair, I am going to use my lifelines.
All right. Welcome, General Katkus.
Madam Chairman, thank you very much for having me here. Tom Katkus, Commissioner, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And I have to say, Representative Wilson is getting better and better every time she testifies at this. She's left me not much room for maneuvering and providing any of their information. She pretty much hit the nail on the head on all of it. What I want to just testify to briefly, then, that is additive to it, is, as we all know, the military is very, very important here in Alaska. This is one more step to clarify a structure that would provide a barrier, a potential barrier to training and opportunity that Alaska offers our military, especially in the areas of JPARC or any other training ranges that we have. So again, very simple clarification. It adds the Coast Guard to it and also removes any ambiguity that could be used to obstruct and or anywhere provide barriers to training for our military in Alaska. Thank you very much for your testimony. I have any questions.
Thank you. Anyone with any committee members with questions for General Katkus or Representative Wilson? Seeing none. All right. You mentioned Kevin Ward being on the line, and I do see that he is available for questions. And I'm forgetting his designation. Could you remind me, Representative Wilson?
Yes, Madam Chair. He is the Regional Counsel for the U.S. Army Regional Environmental Office.
All right. Mr. Ward, do you have any comments to add?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm speaking today on behalf of the DOD Regional Environmental Coordinator as well as the Alaska Military Services. First, I'd like to thank Representative Wilson for her support, not only this year but in previous years regarding this bill. We would ask the committee support and pass this bill. The bottom line is that this amendment clarifies that the Alaska Clean Water Act will apply to military ranges if they are regulated by the Federal Clean Water Act. An ambiguity arose in 2008 when the act was amended for the Alaska Department to obtain primacy from the U.S. EPA. The current language, which was added in 2008, speaks of waters of the United States. Unfortunately, that is a term that has been subject to much litigation, including numerous decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court and other federal courts, numerous policies, regulations, and guidance issued by various federal and other agencies. So we think this change to unless regulated by the Federal Water Pollution Control Act, which is the more formal name for the Federal Clean Water Act, would clear up this ambiguity, would allow consistency between the Alaska program and the federal program, and at the same time allow the Alaska Department to retain primacy and be the decision maker regarding any permits. So in conclusion, I would ask that this committee support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions from committee members? Let's see, you mentioned that Justin Trumbo, San Francisco Department of Defense, was also on the line for any questions. Mr. Trumbo, did you have anything to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Justin Trumbo. I'm the United States Air Force Western Regional Council. I'm Mr. Ward's counterpart in the Air Force. I have nothing really more to add other than to further his comments and also thank Representative Wilson for all her hard work on this bill. And on behalf of all the, of the Department of Defense, we urge the committee to pass this important bill that's going to help sustain military readiness training in Alaska and ensure that military ranges are operated in accordance with federal law. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel. Any questions from committee members? Okay. Seth Bosang is on the line also, Anchorage Department of Law for the DEC. Mr. Bosang, did you have any comments to add?
Through the chair, this is Seth Bosang from the Department of Law. I'm here on behalf of DEC. I have nothing further to add. I agree with the testimony so far, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions, committee members? All right, and the last person here on the list is Michelle Hale, DEC Division of Water. Anything to add, Ms. Hale?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to add that this is just clarifying language, and it does not affect primacy for the Alaska Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Program, and the department supports this legislation.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Hale? Very good. I'm going to open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that has public testimony on this bill? All right. Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. Representative Wilson, any closing remarks?
Just thank you for the opportunity to take care of this issue.
Great. Thank you. I just had one question. This bill's gone through the House. Any concerns expressed on the House side that you were able to respond to?
Madam Chair, no, there has not been.
Okay.
And it actually was vetted through Senate resources last year quite a bit. And so I think we were able to work it out. With these four entities, it really had to be very specific so that we did not, you know, have problems with the primacy that we have taken since then. And it still puts them underneath all the permitting that currently exists.
All right. Very good. Any closing questions, committee members? All right. With that, we're going to set the bill aside. We're going to hear it again in the very near future. Thank you very much, General Katkus and Representative Wilson, for presenting the bill. Thank you. Committee members, that concludes our agenda for today. Our next meeting will be next Monday, March 11th, usual time, and we have some interesting things that we're putting on the agenda for that day, so we'll see you back then. With that, the meeting is adjourned. Time is 4:41 p.m.